Back to the show sure to make you say, I didn't know that. The I Didn't Know That Legal Hour with David Schluter.
Dave Schluter here, attorney at Itasca, 630-285-5300. My email is Dave at Schluter Law Office, S-C-H-L-U-E-T-E-R, lawoffice.com. Check in with us anytime. Tell us how much you like the show. We're actually helping people save money and not have to hire lawyers. Uh-oh, what am I doing there? Well, here's the thing. I'd rather not have your business. If your company's messed up, you know, I don't want to sit there and try to put out your fight. I mean, yeah, you could bill hourly, but yeah, what, I'm going to send you a $25,000 bill on something that my friend Steve Ritter can solve. Steve, what's your company?
Team Clock Institute. And the one of our products is the book that was released about 6 months ago called Team Clock, A Guide to Breakthrough Teams. And you can get a copy of that on Amazon, or you can go to the website, www.teamclock.com, and order a copy there on the products page, or give me a call, 630-707-6155.
Why don't you say that again?
630-707-6155, and the website is www.teamclock.com.
Okay, so companies are dysfunctional. It looks like it's going to be the Titanic. By the way, they found out that somebody turned right into the iceberg. 100 years later, we find this out, actually. It wasn't a scrape. Somebody's come clean. They held it till somebody died, and they finally came clean, Steve, and said, yeah, my grandfather turned right into the iceberg, and they were waiting until everybody was dead that knew him, and now they came clean. But when companies start to head to the iceberg, okay, you mentioned you can be a clinic, you know, do a diagnosis.
Yeah.
What are some of the traps where companies go wrong, besides just plain shredding documents? What are some things that they really could avoid up front, slip and falls, you know?
You know, I think companies don't spend enough time building a good, solid infrastructure of team norms, rules, roles, boundaries, direction, figuring out a good, respectful, professional way of handling differences, those kinds of things. Companies sometimes get way too comfortable in their good times and are afraid to push things and perhaps create some change. And then when change does happen, a lot of companies get mired in the loss. They don't realize that there's some acknowledging and mourning and refocusing and moving on to do. They get kind of stuck sometimes.
Well, you work with some schools where there's been some nonsense, and you've had to come in and help straighten it out. Why don't you tell our listeners some school stories?
Well, schools are wonderful to work with because they all have wonderful desire to help communities and help kids. And sometimes they don't realize that they're getting in their own way sometimes. And so a school recently that I worked with had a faction of the team, a faction of the faculty kind of pull away and turn against the principal after
change. Oh, really? Yeah,
yeah,
I didn't know that. Yeah. Right, yeah, that happens. It's an us and them mentality.
Absolutely.
Maybe you're on one of those deals. Call in here at 312-642-5600. Love to hear the story. Just use a fake name, but go ahead. What happened?
Well, in this particular situation, there had been a change in the community from a very grandfatherly principal who was most loved by everyone.
Okay.
And the person they brought in was extremely different from the person that had left. And
you don't do it like he did.
Exactly.
Or he never asked me for a memo before.
Right.
Why are you asking me this? You're stepping on my toes, right?
That's right. So you can either be nimble and you can move with change and make some adaptations and find out what the new rhythm of this leadership is going to be.
Yep.
Or you can dig in your heels and spend all of your energy trying to fight it and make a change back to the way it used to be.
Yeah, and union situations, too. It's really hard to get rid of a troublemaker.
There's a lot of energy around maintaining the status quo rather than finding a way to adapt to what has changed.
So how'd you help them? What'd you figure out?
Well, we really kind of started at the beginning. You said, all right, what do we all have in common here? Yes, we're here for the kids. And what are our norms and what is our mission and what are our values together and what can we all get together on? But probably the thing that turned the corner was, can we all hold ourselves and each other accountable for the things that we just said were our mission on behalf of these kids?
All right, so you put a fire to them and you said, you just said it's all about the kids. Now you got to step up.
That's right.
And then how long were you engaged in that process?
It took about a year because
it took
a couple of months for people to be able to define the school they wanted to have.
Okay.
But living up to what they had defined was much harder to do. And it didn't work for everyone.
Did they bring the old guy back in at all to try to be a peacemaker?
No, they moved with the change.
Okay.
And, you know, a small group of that faction didn't fit any longer.
Oh, boy.
And they found other places to go.
All right. Now, what about the White Sox? I mean, you're like a high roller. I mean, you're helping the Chicago White Sox back in the day. It's in your book, right?
Yeah.
Tell the White Sox story.
Back in the 80s. And this is, my good friend calls me the James Bond of teams because sometimes you have to be a sleuth. Sometimes teams don't really know what's wrong. They're supposed to be performing well, but something's gone wrong and they can't identify what it was. So this was in the mid-80s. The White Sox had come within one game of going to the World Series. They had lost in the seventh game against the Baltimore Orioles, and they had a wonderful team, and they were supposed to come into 1984, set to win. Everyone, knew they had Tony La Russa as a manager, and they had Lamar Hoyt, Cy Young Award-winning pitcher, and Harold Baines and Carlton Fisk, and everything was supposed to be good.
Good years.
You should have just written up the World Series, in April.
Okay.
But they came into the season, and I think they lost 13 of the first 20 games. I think they were 6-13, something like that.
Okay.
And more than just a one-loss record that was disappointing, you could see that they were, answering interviews with the media in monotones.
No comment.
And sitting back, slouching the dugout rather than up the rail and cheering. And so I'm looking at them and saying, there's something more seriously wrong with this team.
Yeah, right. No kidding.
And, as a clinician, as a licensed clinician, I'm thinking, I don't know why, but this team is clinically depressed. I had come to that conclusion.
So what did you do? You don't just show up with a briefcase.
Well,
how'd you
get in? I was kind of mouthing off to a partner, to a colleague about what I knew was wrong, and he dared me. He said, well, why don't you call up Roland Heeman, the general manager of the White Sox, and tell him that you think his team is depressed. So I took the dare, and I dialed up the same number that I dialed to get tickets, and a receptionist answered, and I said, I'd like to speak with Roland Heeman, please. And she said, just a minute, please. And I,
that's good.
I immediately became a 10-year-old kid because I realized I was about to speak with the general manager of the White Sox and tell him that his team was depressed. And so sure enough, he comes on the phone and says, yes. And I said, Mr. Heeman, I'm just a fan, but I think I know what's wrong with your team. He goes, go ahead, he said. And I said, I think your team is depressed. And, and there was silence. I said, Mr. Heeman? And he said, can you meet me for lunch? And I said, where? He said, Greek Islands, Halstead. And I said, when? He said, 1 o'clock. And I looked at my watch. It was 12:30. I said, yes. And click, hang up. And I realized I'm now going to have lunch with the general manager of the Chicago White Sox. And so I don't know how I got my car there. It was one of those drives where you get somewhere and you don't know how you got there.
Yeah, sure.
I walk in and sit down, and I'm about to start talking, and he kind of shows me the hand and says, I'll talk first. And I saw he'd been crying. His eyes were red, and he said, we are depressed. He said we are. He said, baseball teams are like families. He said, we don't get to see our families for 6 or 7 months out of the year, and so we become each other's family. And I'm like a grandfather to these kids.
Yeah.
Tony La Russa is like a father to them. They're like siblings with each other.
And it's messed up.
And our coaches are like uncles. And he said, two of our most beloved family members, Charlie Lau, our hitting coach, and Lauren Babe, our first base coach, were diagnosed with these aggressive cancers a month before the season started and died. And then we went onto the field for the first time.
Okay.
And I just kind of fell back in my chair and realized, well, who could perform?
Well, the ball's coming in at 98 miles an hour, and you're thinking about your friends.
You're thinking about what you lost.
Okay.
And so we talked about grieving. We talked about mourning, what happens to families and what happens to people. He said, would you like to be our team psychologist? And I'm a 10-year-old boy again, thinking, boy, would I? But what I said, even though I was thinking that, was I don't think that's a good idea. These things are better handled more discreetly and behind the scenes.
Okay.
And so he and I worked for a couple of years behind the scenes.
And now, and they did well.
The season improved. I think Jerome Holtzman, who was the baseball writer for the Chicago Tribune at the time, interviewed Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, at the end of the season, said, what in the world happened to the White Sox? And he said, quoted in the Tribune, the single most reason for the White Sox decline in the 1984 season was the tragic loss of Charlie Lau and Lauren
Babe. There you go.
So here was a team that was supposed to be great, was supposed to perform. It doesn't matter whether it's corporate America or professional baseball or, the recreational basketball league that you play in on the weekends. Sometimes there are things going on that you can't identify that suboptimize what's supposed to be happening.
Business owners, you just heard Steve saying this was a psychological deal going on here, a mental issue that even caused a professional sports team to start to fail beyond any way they could control. I want you to give your website. I want you to talk about your book again, and I want you to give your phone number. But before we do that, did you get to go to any games? Did you get some free games out of the deal?
Well, I have better than games, and I go to my share of White Sox games,
okay.
Believe me, but better than games, I've been able to maintain a relationship with Roland Heeman,
okay.
For now what is getting close to 30 years.
That's so awesome.
So that is really the best part of it, and so he leans on me when
awesome.
He needs a sleuth elsewhere in his career.
Cool.
And knows when to help me find resources for him.
Give the book out, your website, and your number, Steve.
The book is Team Clock, A Guide to Breakthrough Teams. Website is www.teamclock.com, and you can reach me at 630-707-6155.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for those great stories. I really wish you a successful decades or so. Let's see you do well and keep corporate America moving ahead, Steve. It's nice to have you on as a friend.
Thanks, Dave.